It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 323. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please remember to visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You have to forgive my voice tonight, losing it. I've been doing a lot of talking this week and straining the throat, so just forgive me. We're just going to have to fight through this. But before I give out all the information, I want to extend a special welcome to my new friends from the Princeton PC Users Group, where they invited me to speak this past Monday night, and I had a great time, met a lot of nice people, and certainly promoted my show, and I was talking about how to improve performance on your PC. We started talking about backups and Windows 7 and a whole bunch of great topics, and I had a good time, and I want to thank everybody for stopping by now and downloading, and hopefully stay subscribed to the show. And don't forget, you can leave me a voicemail message, and the phone number is 240-949-2450. You can email me questions about any technical topic, suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can get links to all of the archives. That's at mtswiki.com. And you follow me on Twitter so you can learn when I'm broadcasting, when the fresh content is going to be posted after I'm done editing. Follow me on Twitter. It's twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. Well, tonight's topic, I'm going to talk a little bit about my talk at the Princeton PC Users Group. As a matter of fact, I have a great email that I'm going to be reading from one of the users who actually recommended a great utility that I'm going to talk about. And he also has a question. And for our new Fios people, if you've gotten Fios, his question is something that I haven't explored. And I'll get to that in a couple minutes. I have some great voicemails from two listeners with a great topic. One on an Outlook adventure from Kate. And then something that Lou has to comment on, which I think is very important. I also have some other email, and I want to talk about, I have some consulting stories from the last couple weeks, so also want to talk about my Fios outage last Thursday and why there was no show. So I have a jam-packed show tonight. So before we get started, let's take care of business. Anytime I can avoid getting in my car and driving to a meeting and spending all that money on gas and tolls and staying in traffic, I try to avoid that, and I use GoToMeeting to hold my meetings online. For one flat rate, you can hold unlimited meetings per month. For just $49, you can hold as many meetings as you want. It's simple to set up a meeting. Everybody just goes to GoToMeeting.com to join the meeting, and it's an incredible service where you can demonstrate whatever product or software, slides or presentations. It supports voice over IP, a great tool set to help you present what you're and communicate your topic, because everybody sees what you're doing on their desktop. So your desktop is shared on everybody's desktop, and they can see what you're doing. You could try it free for 30 days, but you have to visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast for your free 30-day trial. So let me begin by discussing what happened last week. I am in the middle of connected to a server doing some work for a client, and all of a sudden, everything goes dead on the internet. And I know the internet connection absolutely dropped. And I heard a bang out front. And I just knew, I just knew that the line had been cut somehow. I just felt that, it just in my bones. And I quickly went over to the TV, no TV, no dial tone, nothing on the phone. So when the internet, when the phone's down, when the TV's down, my complete Fios connection was down. I go out front, and on the sidewalk, you can see the wire, and you can see the fiber inside the wire, just all exposed. They were doing construction across the street, and I went over, and I said, you know, what happened? And they, of course, blamed it on a truck going by that took out the wire. And I knew that he was lying to me. He knew, I knew he was lying. What am I going to do? He can't repair it. I have to call Fios and get them to schedule to get this connected, because it just ripped right out of the pole. So I call Fios tech support, and they were going to start diagnosing the problem. I said, stop. The wire is disconnected. It is laying on the ground in front of my house. Don't just send a truck. Send a bucket truck, because they will have to go up and redo the wire. And, of course, much, much later, about 6 o'clock at night, we get finally a bucket truck and a regular truck. And they have to string a wire that the Fios cable is 600 feet long. It goes through three telephone poles across the street to the top of my house. And then I live on a very big street with two lanes of traffic. And let me tell you, when they are running that wire, it is not easy to stop traffic at 6 o'clock, 6:30 in the evening. So we didn't get fully connected to almost 8 o'clock at night. And I was just thoroughly exhausted. And there was just no way that I was ready to go on live last week. So that's why I knew to cancel the show early, because I knew it was going to take a long time. And remember, they told me it may not even happen that night. So that's why I was worried that I was going to be down for a couple days. Well, when your business relies on your internet connection, work out of my house, and that's how I make a living, by consulting, where I need my phone, I need my internet connection. Well, I was technically offline. I mean, my business was down. So how do I continue? And that's why I think this is an appropriate topic. In order to have a backup internet connection, which I do not have, I don't have dial-up. I don't have a dial-up account, which would have been crazy anyway. I don't have any kind of backup until now. I was going to turn on tethering of my iPhone, and I called AT&T. And the funniest thing happened. AT&T actually talked me out of tethering. He said, "If right now I am unlimited on my plan. If they add tethering, they're going to limit me to 2 gig a month, but they're going to charge me an extra $15 a month for the privilege. So they're going to lower the amount of data that I can use per month and then charge me $15. Someone in the chat just mentioned this, and I said, so basically you're encouraging me to jailbreak my phone. And he said, if you don't want to move from your unlimited plan, then I recommend you buy a card that you buy a 3G card that's pay as you go. And he said, you know, Virgin Mobile has one. And he says, there's, you know, a couple good ones out there. Now, this is the tech support from AT&T. By the way, at the same time, remember I talked about my AT&T problems? he called up my account. And remember, I moved everything to my wife's name so I could save money on the AT&T bill because she works for the government and we can get a discount. At the store, they charged me $18 per phone, a fee to just move the account from one name to the other. He's seen this and he said, that is totally wrong. He says, let me get a business manager on and I'm going to get you a credit. I had to wait about 4 or 5 minutes, but it was well worth it. He gets back on and he says, I'm crediting your account $83. And I was like, this was awesome. So I had tremendous tech support from AT&T, but I still don't have my backup for internet connection. So I go to Walmart and I buy a Virgin Mobile Broadband to Go 3G plug and play USB device. And it is very simple. It costs $75. It lists online here for $79.99. I got it for $75. Then I bought a prepaid card, and I bought one for $60. Now, when I went online and I connected, and it took me to a page to register, and once you go through the process, it's very simple. It's a one-time process. I knew I was going to be doing a little traveling this month, and this past weekend, I was at a hotel that had no internet connection. I purchased for 1 month $40 unlimited. So I was able to go online. It certainly wasn't enough bandwidth to do a show and to send up all the audio and video that I wanted to do, you know, for a Mike Tech show, but it allowed me to be able to get my email, to be able to get my internet, log me in, worked. So I was able to remote control systems. So for the rest of the afternoon on Thursday, I was productive. And now I am in a position that after, at the end of the month, when that expires, then I'm going to just let it expire. And now I have a prepaid card that I can activate when I have an emergency. It's a great idea if you don't want to commit to a regular monthly fee because you end up paying, you know, $50, $60 or more per month. And I don't want to make that kind of a commitment because for the most part, I'm not going to have that kind of an accident with Fios, or I'm not going to be in a situation where I can't get internet access. It is a great idea for a backup. And that's why I wanted to mention this for anybody out there, or maybe a client or a family member or someone that you know. If they're in the need of an emergency internet connection, hey, this pay-as-you-go is a great idea. It's like the old days when you didn't need a cell phone, but you kind of had, you know, the track phones and things like that because you didn't want to get into a regular monthly fee. I think it's a great idea to have a backup internet connection, and I support Broadband to Go. It definitely, the connections varied depending on where I was in the house and certainly where you are. It's interesting. You get 100 meg for $10. And then I think it goes up to, I think they have like 5 gig. They have all kinds of plans. The plan details, I'm going to have a link that you can follow online and you could go over all the details. I found the Verizon modem was way too expensive, and that's why I didn't do that. Anyway, all ended well. I have backup to my internet connection. My Fios is up and running, so we're very, very happy. Now, Monday night, I was invited to give a presentation to the Princeton PC Users Group. And if you look at the website at miketechshow.com, you're going to find that I have a blog entry with the links of the topics that I talked about. And a lot of them I've talked about right here on the Mike Tech Show. I've talked about the Glary utilities and how to speed up your system by not spending any money, by literally great free utilities. And one of the things I want to bring up, David from the group, he said, Mike, thanks for entertaining And the information from your talk from last night at the Princeton PC Users Group. This is a reminder of a couple points I brought up at the meeting. I mentioned the program to see information about your computer, which is like BellArc on steroids. And I talked about SIW and some other programs. The program he recommended is Fresh Diagnose. I'm going to have the link in the show notes. Certainly you can Google it. Now, I downloaded Fresh Diagnose and used it. Very complete. You get a lot of great detailed information on everything you would ever want to know about your system. Two annoying things, though. The Fresh Diagnose, when you go to the website, I don't like the way it behaves when you try to exit and when you try to leave one screen. It forces you into another. I don't like websites that take control over my complete experience within my browser. I don't like that. Second, they make you register with a valid email, and you have to give them a valid email address and a name so they can send you a link to be able to go download it, and then they send you a registration key. If you don't mind going through that process, then it's worth looking at that. And I went through the process and it wasn't bad, but I just wanted to let you know my experience as I went through that. But I think it is worth it. Let's hope. I'm hoping now that my email is not going to be on being sold off onto all kinds of spam lists, and hopefully my Gmail spam catcher will catch it all. So we'll have to see how much junk email I start getting. But the utility is a nice program. Secondly, he asked this question about the Verizon Media Manager. And he says the latest version allows you to listen to internet radio. It's under the music tab. Now, anybody who has Fios and has a DVR where they make that the master media DVR, you can now have, you can download this free Verizon Media Manager and manage your DVRs in the house. And also, it enables the DVR to now access information from your computer so you can spool music, videos, your pictures, and you can watch them on your TV from your, you know, being accessed from your computer. Well, we asked the following. The list of radio stations provided by Verizon is limited, but you can add new stations. So far, I have failed miserably, as I cannot seem to find the station URL. The description seems clear enough, but when I select an internet station, I cannot find the station URL. For example, I visited www.gotradio.com and was unable to play any of their stations, but I could not find the URL for the individual stream that Media Manager would accept. If you or your audience can provide some help, I would be most grateful. Once again, thanks for a great talk, David. David, thank you so much for the email. And I know I have listeners who have Fios and are using the Verizon Media Manager. I got to admit, I downloaded it and I have barely used it. So I'm not sure what they're looking for. Are they really looking for the RSS feed of the radio station? Can he spool podcasts by putting the RSS feed in there? So that's what I need some help with. Write me, at miketechshow@gmail.com, or better yet, leave me a voicemail, record a voicemail and email it to me, and I'll play it on the air and I will share it back with David. All right, couple things that happened. One, over the holiday weekend, Labor Day, I get a panic phone call on a Saturday. One of my clients, they have an office that holds all of their servers, and then a couple people are also in that office. Now, the company's much bigger, but it's sort of their server room, and they have a portable air conditioner that helps dump a lot of air into the room to offset the heat. Well, over the weekend, the air conditioner died. The room temperature got to over 120 degrees. Well, guess what? Hardware starts shutting down. Servers, they don't like the heat. So I get a call. I said, you got to leave the servers off until you get the air conditioner replaced. So they start making some phone calls, and they get someone. I said, look, just go to a Home Depot, go to a Lowe's, get a portable air conditioner and hook it back up while this one failed, so at least you can get going. Now, they have a point of sale system, which is a smaller computer. I said, leave that on. He'll be okay. And then they ventilated the room, and they got some fans, and they were able to cool the room down. One of the things that failed was a switch, and a small switch. And so I was able to get down there on Tuesday morning, right after Labor Day, and I was able to install the switch and take care of that. So that was one thing that I was able to, you know, that I experienced. And it was interesting. I was doing a semantic endpoint antivirus upgrade on a server on Saturday when that phone call came in. And I was able to, you know, so I was at a client while that was happening. And then another client whose point of sale system, we were talking about going wireless, and I mentioned a few weeks ago, that worked. It was great. As someone asked me what type of switch. Actually, you would think, since it's only a couple servers and the company is small, I actually used a gigabit D-Link green switch that's gigabit, that's small, no heat. And for the amount of computers that they're using, it's fine. And the amount of users that are accessing it, it was fine. But you're right. Comet Flyer in the chat wanted to know if it was an HP switch. And when it warrants, I will use an HP switch. And then, of course, I have clients that have Juniper switches and Cisco switches, but I do prefer the HP switch. And then for real small jobs, if everybody in Ustream, if you look over my shoulder, you'll see a brown box. Sitting on top of that brown box is one of those portable switches. I always keep some in stock. I have to install another one for a client next week one night. I love that from Newegg, the 8-port D-Link green gigabit switch. It's like $39 for an 8-port gig switch, and I have used it here for a long time. I've used one for over a year in my house before I replaced it with the HP switch, and I love it. And for the price, very, very nice. So for small clients, small jobs, and you want to go gigabit, it's a great recommendation. Here is something interesting, and I got to solve this next week. A client who added cameras and a DVR for recording in their place of business, they want to be able to access the camera videos when they are outside the company. So they connected the DVR to their network and they plugged it into the Comcast business router. Now, I was brought into the scene after all this has been set up for a long, long time, and now I'm being asked to help with the setup. So some port forwarding, and they said there is a Linksys, there's a Linksys router. And I'm looking at the IP scheme, and I was like, well, wait a second here. I get into the Linksys router, and I see that there's, you know, four other computers connected to it, and they're doing wireless, and it's going out to the internet, but it's not directly connected to the internet. It's going to another outside internet IP address, and then it's going out to the internet. So remotely, while I'm logged in, I am trying to figure out what's going on here. So here's what happens. I have a Linksys router with a 192.168 subnet connected to a Comcast managed router, which is doing a 10.1.10 subnet. When they plugged the one into the one router, that's why I couldn't ping it. So here's what I'm doing. I'm taking since they have more ports than they do available, I'm taking an 8-port a small 8-port switch. I'm connecting it directly into the Comcast router, plugging everything into that, and then I'm going to take, because they want wireless, I'm going to dummy down that router and make it just an access point and make it on the 10 network. So everything's going to be on the 10 network and everything's going to be playing together. It was interesting where someone added wireless, and how they did it, it was amazing that it worked, because they had a static IP address. They actually had two static IP addresses that they were able to get it to work. And if it wasn't for one of the people that I was working with on the other end of the phone who had a notebook, and I said, do me a favor, plug it into that Comcast router. Can you get out to the internet? And he got right out. I said, tell me your IP address. And it was a 10. And then I was like, okay. And so as I kind of drew a picture of how everything was connected following the IP addresses, I was able to figure out what the problem is. So now, in a few minutes, when I go down there on Tuesday evening next week, I'm going to be able to resolve all of this. Something I was able to do with a client last week, one afternoon, a client bought an external hard drive. He wanted it to be encrypted, and he just wanted his data backed up from multiple machines that he could take, mount it, kick off his data backup so it would sync, and he would do this on three different computers. I used TrueCrypt for the encryption, SyncBack for syncing the data files that he needed, and it was a very nice little terabyte external hard drive. I decided that I was going to talk about that tonight, but I have so many other things I'm going to talk about. I'm going to save that for a separate show so I can go in detail, because I think a lot of you have often asked me, Mike, you talk generally about a lot of things. You know, sometimes I go into the detail, into the nitty-gritty and the specifics of it, but I think going into the explicit detail of using TrueCrypt. Now, you know, Winston and I did the show with Keith on encryption, but we never took you step by step. We talked in theories in general on how everything works, but actually taking you through it step by step of using TrueCrypt, I am going to do a show dedicated to that and dedicated to exactly how to use the free version of SyncBack. So now you can have an encrypted drive with your data. So if you lose that, who cares? You have no worries. Nobody will get to that data. That's very, very important. Okay, a couple things, and then I have some great voicemails here. This is from Mark, and the last show, I gave away 5 keys to a program that a listener has written to be able to have different speeds for the audio that you're playing. And Mark wrote in, and I gave them all out, so they're all gone now. Well, he said, Mike, thank you for the nice gift. I posted this feedback on iTunes, and also 5 stars. The Apple iPod player is fine for listening to music in linear mode. Yes, it has a double time and a 30-second skip back. But if you're going to listen to podcast media, this tool is a must. It can reduce your end-to-end listening time dramatically. It is perfect for reviewing and skimming cast data. It allows you to not only variably adjust your playing time, but study mode allows you to set multiple custom skip aheads and skip backward times. Additionally, it also adds invaluable features such as a sleep timer and the ability to compile an on-the-fly playlist of podcasts. I wish all music sound playing apps had a sleep timer. If you listen to podcast, save yourself some time. So a thumbs up review of the Speed Up Player app, and you can get that from the Apple store for your iPod or your iPad, your iTouch, your iPhone. Thank you very much, Mark, for that review. This is on Windows Storage Server 2008. I have very limited experience with this operating system. Hey, Mike, playing around with some stuff on TechNet that is available to me, and I installed Windows Storage Server 2008. I have a question for you. After the install, it rebooted, and it's now asking for an administrative password. And I have searched online, and it says the default password is WSS2008. But no matter what I do, I cannot seem to get it to accept it. I have also tried to remote control into it, but because I have not done any setup, all I have is a possible IP address. Any ideas, Mark? If anybody has any kind of assistance here, please let me know. It's Windows Storage Server 2008, and he needs the default password. Mark, since you have TechNet, and hopefully they won't charge you for one of your tech support calls, you get two free tech support calls. Also, TechNet has really good forums. I would just literally duplicate this email into the forum or call tech support and say, you know, you don't feel that it's fair to burn one of your tech support calls on this, but ask them, and they got to have a way around this. So maybe the default password is something else. Also, I know this may sound silly, but have you tried password? Have you tried administrator? Have you tried nothing blank and tried to get in? Have you also tried any of the safe modes to boot and try to get in? Also, something that you may want to try, there is Oafcrack, but you have a bootable Linux distribution that can reset an administrator password. Now, I don't know if it would work with this operating system, but that is certainly worth a try. I have two great voicemails that I want to get to. The first one is from Kate. It's a long story, but well worth it on her Outlook adventure. Give a listen.
Hi, Mike. It's Kate Sturr. Katie Eels up here in Canada calling. I have a tip for anybody else who, like me, isn't experienced with Outlook and ends up doing some Outlook troubleshooting. I know you guys that work with Outlook all the time are going to go, where's she been? But this is really one of the first times I've actually had to wrestle Outlook to the ground. I have a new client. They have XP Service Pack 3 computers at each of four nursing stations, and they have several other pretty much identical computers at reception and at various administrative offices throughout their buildings. So I got a call from my contact there who said for some reason one of the nursing station computers can't open some faxes in Outlook, but they can open other faxes, and all the other nursing stations can open the faxes that this one can't open. So I go out there, and it turns out that all the faxes are emailed from a fax server, and they end up in Outlook 2007, which is running on this XP machine. So I tried opening one of the problem attachments, and I got a message that said that I couldn't preview it because there's a problem with PDF preview. So here's what didn't work. Updating Adobe Reader didn't work because it was up to date. Repairing Adobe Reader didn't work. Repairing Microsoft Office didn't work. Updating Microsoft Office didn't work. Applying some Windows updates that were lying around waiting to be applied didn't work. And eventually I realized that the previewer is exactly that, a previewer. Duh. So it means that you don't have to open your PDF viewer. It just previews the thing. So at least that explained why monkeying around with Adobe Reader didn't work. And what else didn't work was turning that off and installing a Foxit previewer. I mean, it just didn't work. So I turned off all the previewers, tried to open the faxes again. I didn't get that error anymore, but instead I got a really bizarre, completely different message that said, can't create file, blah, 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 .pdf. Right-click the folder you want to create the file in, and then click properties on the shortcut menu to check your permissions for the folder. I mean, that's the error message. That's got to be the most verbose message I've ever seen from Microsoft, and it was completely unhelpful. Now, I did some searching, and there's a lot of information on this stuff that has to do about PDF viewer not working with 64-bit versions of Office 2007 and with 64-bit versions of Windows 7. But none of that applied, and none of the fixes that were around are recommended for Office 2007 on a Windows XP machine. So I finally found out that what happens is the fax server, which is unfortunately faxing prescriptions from a pharmacy, every fax sent from this location, it's named the same thing, which is basically the phone number, so 10 digits .pdf. Outlook stores all this stuff in a temporary folder, and when it gets duplicate file names, it appends a number to it. The problem is that when it gets to 100, it throws up on its shoes and it generates this error message. So the solution, it turns out, is to locate this temporary folder, delete the contents of it, and then open up Outlook again. But, you know, of course the folder is randomly named, so it's different for everyone, different for every profile. And it's interesting. So you have to find the thing, and to do that you make sure Outlook is closed. Then you open up RegEdit, and you browse to HKEY Current User Software Microsoft Office, in this case 12.0, Outlook Security. And then in the right-hand pane you have to locate the folder called Outlook Secure Temp Folder and double-click on it to open it, and that's where you see the path. So copy the path, close RegEdit. You're making sure, of course, that Outlook is closed during all of this, right? Go back to Start, hit Run, paste in the path. That takes you to the folder. Delete the contents of the folder. And I don't think deleting the folder would be a good idea. Just kill off the contents. Then I did all that, and I opened up Outlook, and damned if it didn't work. Amazing. I mean, it worked. But naturally, I got to wondering if I was going to get to go back and do this at least four more times. And I don't know. I mean, I fixed the one I was there to fix. And after I got home, I tracked down a knowledge base article from Microsoft that might have a registry hack that looks like it might prevent that from happening. I'll send you all the links to all this stuff that I found. But I thought that might help somebody else out. And I sure would appreciate hearing from you guys that know about Outlook what your take is on this. Is there something that's actually going to prevent this from happening? Because this is a nursing facility, and those prescriptions are going to come in, and they're going to keep coming in from that same spot. So thanks, Mike. Take care.
I wish I had an answer for you, Kate. Out of everything, the only thing that I ran into was the 64-bit Office 2010 fix for the preview of a PDF. I had to apply that fix in order to be able to preview PDFs. But I have this sneaking suspicion you're going to have to do this. And I'm wondering, is there a way you can use auto hotkey? Is there a way you can make some kind of a macro to do this every time that it's needed? Or is that folder name going to be so different that you're not going to be able to nail it down as to which one? I'm thinking, is there a way to kind of piece together to automate all those steps that you could maybe click it and then make it a way to happen? You know, when it happens, they click this. It cleans up that folder. I don't know. If anybody else has any ideas for Kate, let us know. But I'm very glad that you shared that, because it's these kind of problems that everybody will, you know, run into. And it's great to hear when someone else is in the trenches trying to work out and solve these problems. And that's what this show's all about, because you may be listening and say, oh my gosh, you know, that was a long voicemail and a long story. But you may think back to this, if you run into this with a client, and you're going to be like, hey, you know what? I know Mike, you know, Kate said that she sent Mike a whole bunch of links, and you know what? I'm putting them in the show notes. You might be able to Google, you know, 6 months from now, and some of these links might be pertinent from my website that may help you with this problem that you might run into. You're not running into it now, but at some point, especially if you're doing what we do with consulting, and, you know, we run into all kinds of stuff. Now, I have one more voicemail that I want to play, that it is an interesting topic that I think everybody should hear. And this is from our good friend Lou, who's the moderator. Give a listen.
This is your buddy Lou from the Lou Trek Show. By now, I'm sure you've either discussed or you've probably heard about the wonderful thing that Google has done called Google Instant. Now, if you just don't have 2 seconds to wait until you press the enter button from the time you type your search query, it will automatically pop up something for you. However, I want to make sure everybody understands something I found out, because I was curious what would happen if you started to type something innocently and Google misinterpreted that. And that's just what happened. Exactly as I anticipated. I wanted to know what would be the steps that you'd want to take to master your career. Let's say you want to be the best at what you do and you want to master the field at which you work. So I said, how to master. Now, you can just imagine what came up. And even something you wouldn't have imagined at that point also came up. Now, the reason why I bring this up, and I'm sorry that if this sounds a little graphic to the users, but it's kind of important that you need to understand what you're doing. If you have children who are using the computer, and I do, I have an 8-year-old little girl who uses a computer all the time, and she uses Google. She uses them to find Justin Bieber videos. Well, if she was to type something innocently and it comes up with something disgusting, she's not going to understand it. And so the problem there becomes you have to try and filter it out. Well, Google used to have, right on the main page at google.com, a preferences button. You click it, and then you could do a safe search, strict safe search, and so on. Now, you have to find it yourself. So you actually have to go to google.com/preferences. And I suggest you do that very, very quickly on any computer that a child has access to. The only problem is, as we all know, children are sometimes smarter than we are, and they're going to find a way around that. They'll go to google.com/preferences and just change it back, and they're going to have access to what they want. But in the meantime, for the younger ones, you need to protect them. And apparently, Google's not getting that point. I even tried to find a way to complain to Google about that, and good luck there. There's no way to complain. So the best thing for us to do is get the word out that Google Instant is a great tool if you're an adult. Otherwise, it's going to pop up something that your children have no understanding what it means, and eventually they're going to come out and ask you, Daddy, what does it mean if you fill in the blank? Thank you for playing this. I just needed to get that out, let everybody know. I will be talking about that on my next show, Show 68 of the Lou Trek Show. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for bringing that up. Since my youngest is 16, I don't even think about that. And you bring up a very valid point where, as at a minimum, you have to go to the preferences and put safe searches. And it's a shame. There's no way to lock that. that's what we really want from Google, which is a way to password protect the preferences so we can lock it down. And then that would be the way. Now, you can block it with OpenDNS, but that's too late. They've already seen the descriptions. So OpenDNS will stop you from going to the site, but there still could be descriptions that can be graphic that you don't want to appear. So I don't believe OpenDNS will block that. Another way, Lou mentions he's in the chat, use a different search engine. I know there is a kids Google that you could, I forget what the name of the site is, but it only searches children's safe sites. And you could make that the default site and then lock down on your system, blocking the ability to go to Google. That is something that I don't know if that would work. I know this should generate a lot of email. I know it will. Maybe we should do it. We should plan a show on making your system, you know, child safe, you know, and ways to do it. I know, boy, it's been a long time. I know Friends in Tech. I'm going back a long time. I haven't even been to that site in so long. I don't know, even if it's still up. But they had a flyer and a whole bunch of great information on what to do to kind of child-proof your system. And I'm going to see if I can dig that up and get a link to it. That still might be floating around. That is it for tonight's show. No music tonight, but I think lots of great content. I hope lots of information. I hope you learn something and maybe stimulate it. A thought where you can, you know, send in a question or a comment, and you can email me, miketechshow@gmail.com. And don't forget the phone number, 240-949-2450. A huge thank you. And the person knows who this is. When you go to my Amazon link and you click on the Amazon link to purchase something, I don't know who it is, but this one person said, you know, sent me an email and said, you should be seeing some large purchases come through on your using your Amazon link. And man, he was right. And they appeared today because I will get the commission 2 months later, but I don't see it until after the product ships. Just a huge, huge thank you to everybody. And especially the individuals using my link for such large purchases. I really appreciate it. That's what supports the show. Thank you so very much. Check out my other affiliate links on the left-hand side. Great videos from Steve Cherubino, from Podnuts, from TechNibble, a great business kit for all of the forms that you would ever want. That's also on the left, on the left-hand side of the website. That's it. Thank you, everybody. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.